Bowl is in the books, and the season has come to an end. But we're back here on For the Numbers, presented by FTNFantasy.com. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. Good to be back after a little hiatus. And before we move on to 2025, the rookies, the free agents, I want to take a step back and recap every single team from the 2024 season to see what we can apply, what we can learn from these teams, what stood out from fantasy football perspective. And I want to start with the AFC East. So we'll talk about all the teams, starting with the AFC East. And of course, you wouldn't listen to this podcast, and it wouldn't be me if I weren't starting with the Buffalo Bills, a team very close to my heart, as well as our special guests, bringing on Michael F. Florio from NFL Network, NFLFantasy.com. Also a diehard Bills fan, so I thought there's nobody else to get on this podcast. I'm sure we'll rant. I'm sure we'll tilt about another offseason of the Bills, of what could have been. But Florio, appreciate the time. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're recovering well. Better than I did, at least, when the Bills lost in the AFC title game. And I got the flu 24 hours later, but appreciate you stopping by. What's going on?
Oh, the flu sounds rough. Thank you so much for having me. I was actually, so I live in LA, but I had to travel to New York for a wedding that weekend of the AFC championship game. So I was originally supposed to fly home Sunday, pushed it back to Monday because duh, but
right.
I had to wake up at legitimately 3:45 in the morning the day after the AFC championship game. Let me tell you, that flight home would have been so much more fun had the Bills won, because I don't know if I would have went to bed. Like, if they were going to the Super Bowl, I don't know what I would have done with myself, but I know I would have had fun.
Yeah, and it's tough because it would have been really difficult for me if they did make the Super Bowl, because I'm in PA, so like all of my friends essentially are diehard Eagles fans, and that would have been just, I don't know if I would have watched it with them. And with the way the Eagles looked, I don't know if the Bills would have won, because my goodness, being able to get a 50% pressure rate with zero blitzes is a recipe for success. But we're not here to talk about the Eagles. We're here to talk about the Bills. And basically for this series, just breaking down quarterback through tight end, obviously some positions and some players, especially we'll start here at quarterback with the Bills, will be easier than others. But this is an interesting team, obviously, not just for us as Bills fans, but look, this was a very polarizing team coming into the offseason, right? What are they going to do without Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis? What's the defense going to look like with all of those key veterans that they lost? Will the offensive line look the same without Mitch Morse and company? It was a really interesting season, and all the Bills ended up doing is going 13-4, going to the AFC title game, ranking second in points per drive, second in offensive DVOA, second in points per game, over 30 per game. And why is that? It's because Josh Allen's arguably the best player in the league, wins the MVP. We got that to hang our hat on, Florio, the MVP of the NFL. But, I mean, what else is there to say about Josh Allen, right? He's been now a top three fantasy quarterback in five straight seasons. I don't know. Like, we follow each other on Twitter. We both love to tweet about how Josh Allen is amazing. Every Sunday when the Bills play, I tweet, Josh Allen plays football today. Like clockwork. So, but is there anything else to take away from him? I think there are some things, because it was, he did it in a different way this season, in a different offense. But other than him being fantastic, I mean, what takeaways did you have from Josh Allen in the passing game this season with the Bills? Again, a lot of question marks going into the season.
I think you learned that we always knew we could trust Josh Allen from a fantasy standpoint. He is, I think he is the greatest fantasy quarterback of all time. I think his only competition right now is Lamar Jackson, which is fitting because of the MVP race we just saw this year. But I think there was concerns. We were talking a little bit before the show. I don't think me and you had those same concerns, because I expected the Bills to win as many games as usual. I expected them to win the division. And Josh Allen was my MVP pick all year. Like, I picked him to win the MVP before the year. Even before the Chiefs game, we did like a midway check-in. I was like, he's still going to win the MVP. And then at the end of the year, he was my MVP as well. Because I thought this narrative of, I thought he would play just like Josh Allen always plays, but the narrative would be, look who he's doing it with. No Steph Diggs. He lost every receiver but one. But I think for people outside of Buffalo or Bills fans and people who watch him weekly like we do, Adam, There was concerns about like what this is going to look like. Is the passing game going to fall off a cliff? Is Josh Allen going to look like pre-Stephon Diggs Josh Allen again? All of these questions. And he went and he put him to bed and he was a top two fantasy quarterback. He showed why he should once again be one of the top two fantasy quarterbacks drafted off the board next year. He's my QB1. I get it if you want to take Lamar Jackson QB1, though. But my biggest takeaway is, say this guy can't do something, and he will just prove you wrong. Because originally the narrative was like, oh, he's not accurate. Then he comes back, and he's extremely accurate. And there was always all these questions and narratives of what he could do. And then the last real one was turnover machine, and his response was to play the cleanest season of football a quarterback has ever played. So
yeah, lowest negative play rate since the NFL merger, which is essentially sacks and turnovers. He didn't get sacked. He had what, 6 picks, a fumble. Like, it's just, he played about as flawless as you can play the quarterback position this season. And it was extremely satisfying for me too, because like so many people that didn't like him coming out have still been holding on to that. Like, oh yeah, but what about the turnovers then? Now that that is put to bed this season, it's like you literally can't say anything about him other than, okay, he hasn't beaten Patrick Mahomes. But as we could rant about, the defense gives up 35 points a game in games against Mahomes. So there's really nothing you can say to take away from Josh Allen. And again, like, we're biased, obviously, but he's at the very worst, the second best player on the planet, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Mahomes still earns number one. Even though people get mad at me when I say this, like, to me, the biggest difference between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes is Mahomes has had Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, and Josh Allen hasn't. But I know people care about results and all of that. But yeah, I have no concerns fantasy-wise, real-life-wise, anything. The only thing Allen has left to prove is to win a Super Bowl, and I still firmly believe he will get at least one in his career. But there's a lot of time left to see that. As a going into 2025, to me, I think it's him and Lamar, and for the top two quarterbacks in fantasy. And no, like, I love Jaden Daniels, but I think for me, he's clear cut three. Like,
well, I was literally about to ask you, Jaden Daniels has to be three, right? So I'm glad we're on the same page, because that's how I would rank it too. The one thing I will say that changed with Josh this season, and I get asked this a lot from people on Twitter because I know I follow the Bills as closely as I do. Every offseason, it's, you know, Adam, do you think this is final of the year? Josh runs less. And then you hear McDermott talk about it and Brandon Bean talk about it and Josh himself talk about it. And it hadn't really happened until this season. It did start to happen a little bit, which we'll talk about a little bit when we get into the running game from Buffalo. But I will say the Joe Brady offense, this was his first full season, took over in week 11 of last season. I guess, you know, now it technically is last season, but of 2023. And this was more of a, Josh, we don't need you to play hero ball. Let's get a lot of these, you know, layup receptions. And as a result, 6.5 yards after the catch per completion, highest mark of his career. And Joe Brady's going to be back, right? We saw that during the playoff run. He didn't take those head coaching interviews, really. He's going to stay with Buffalo, so I think that's a win for the Bills and a win for Josh Allen. And again, now that this season where he had Matt Collins and Shakir, you know, as his lead receivers, and Amari Cooper we'll talk about, really didn't do much. Yeah, I don't really care who's playing receiver for Josh Allen next season. And of course, he still had plenty of rushing touchdowns as well. Anything else on Josh? I mean, we could talk about Josh for an hour and not get bored of it.
MVP, he is your MVP whether you like it or not. And
I love Lamar. I think Lamar is unbelievable. But the people saying that Josh got this we feel bad for you MVP, it's just like, come on, like, what are we doing?
Because the argument falls on its head, I would say, when you look at 2023, and it was like Lamar had, by MVP accounts, pretty poor stats, but he won it because of other reasons, because you watch it and you're like, he's so important to that team. No one was more important to their team than Josh Allen this year.
Yeah, and I think that's the case every year since like the last three. Like, nobody carries more of a load on the offense for their entire team than Josh Allen does.
People get annoyed that I say that, but it's 100, in my opinion, 100% true. And statistically speaking, you could make a case, not no Super Bowls and all of that, but just statistically speaking, you could make a case that this is one of the best like 5 year runs in NFL history.
Yep, and I don't think I don't want to speak for you, but I assume with you being a Bills fan, you'll agree with me that there was so many times where we were just hoping for a league average quarterback, and now we have arguably the best in the league. And I do agree with you that he will win a Super Bowl before it's all said and done.
I have so much love for like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tyrod Taylor.
Yep.
Yeah, like
I still have my Tyrod jersey.
Those were great quarterbacks for the Bills pre Josh Allen.
Yeah, I still have my Tyrod jersey. I was, dude, how anxious I was that offseason when they finally ended up re-signing him. I didn't want him to go. Like that was, and again, like Josh Allen is like again an MVP quarterback, and I just after watching those guys and EJ Manuel and JP Lossman and Drew Bledsoe and Rob Johnson and Trent Edwards, it's like I didn't think we'd get to this point. So that's why I'm trying not to get too upset about the Super Bowl not happening yet, because he's only 28. I feel like it'll happen. Yeah, Josh Allen, obviously the catalyst of this offense, but right behind him had to have been James Cook, who for me was one of the five players in fantasy this offseason that I wanted to draft most. I was all in on James Cook. It didn't happen the way I expected it to, though. I was all in on James Cook. On top of him being a good player and a good offense, I expected a lot of production in the receiving game with Steph, Gabe Davis gone, and what we saw from Joe Brady what we saw from Cook when Joe Brady took over the offense. It was a lot of receptions. Josh Allen's checkdown rate went up to like 10%. It was like 4% higher in Brady's offense. So I'm thinking James Cook could catch 55, 60 passes. That didn't happen, Florio, but of course, going from two rushing touchdowns in 2023 to 16, tied for the most in the NFL this year, that told the story.
Yeah, I was huge on James Cook in 2023. He was my most drafted player in all of my leagues. And I thought that was a great like breakout kind of season for Cook. I was on the opposite side of things from you last year. Not that like any knock against James Cook. I know he's an amazing real life running back. My concern was Ty Johnson's there. Ray Davis is there. So if my big concern was if Ty Johnson gets obvious passing downs, which he did, he was playing 2 minute drill, third down back, stuff like that. Yeah. But then my bigger concern was like if Ray Davis starts to take drives away, like we've seen teams do these rotations where it's like two drives is James Cook, one drive is another running back, or the Bills don't do it that way, but other teams do. And I was like, if that's the case and James Cook isn't going to get 18 touchdowns, it's going to be a rough fantasy year. And I came away from this year, though, feeling the exact opposite. Like, yes, it's hard to count on 18 touchdowns going into next year, but I think there's a scenario like this feels like the floor for James Cook yardage wise, especially with what we saw from him later and later in the year, just continues to get better and better and has those that big burst breakaway. Like he had to play week 18 to get 1,000 yards.
Yeah,
I think he could easily run for 1,000 plus next year. And if Ty Johnson leaves, then I think the receiving numbers bounce back. But that it's crazy to say like Ty Johnson is this huge.
I don't want Ty Johnson to leave.
As a Bills fan, I don't either. But yeah, if you're like a James Cook dynasty manager, you probably for sure do.
Yeah. And Jimbo's got this will be the last year of his deal. So the Bills have a lot of questions, right? They have to decide if they want to extend Jimbo. They still have Terrell Bernard extension, Greg Rousseau extension, Christian Benford extension. So they have a lot of decisions to make. And after what Jimbo just did, like it's tough to not put him, even though he plays a running back position, towards the top of that list. And look, I mean, it coincides with Josh Allen. You look at from 2022 to 2023, Josh Allen had 25 carries from inside the 5 yard line, and James Cook only had 4 during that span. That went up to 13 this past season, with Allen only having 10 from inside the 5. That was his lowest since 2021. So they were definitely a lot more, I don't want to say hesitant, but it was more of like Josh, we'll call these design runs in these huge games, the Lions game, the Chiefs games, or when you saw Josh really run, and then obviously in the playoffs. But look, I've been charting this since Joe Brady took over. I mean, I'm sure you remember the game last year when they played Dallas and they ran all over the Cowboys. I was at that game. I was like 5 rows from the bench. And you could tell that Jimbo in this Joe Brady role is just way more comfortable. He's now played, I think it's 28 games postseason and regular season since Joe Brady took over as the OC. In those games, he's averaging 17 touches, 90 scrimmage yards, and about 16.5 fantasy points per game. And again, that's like you mentioned with him last year, only playing more than 55% of the snaps three times all year long. Like, he doesn't play 60% of the snaps very often because Ty Johnson plays nearly 64% of third downs. They still give Ray Davis a couple of drives. So, yes, you're not expecting the touchdown to be anywhere close to the same. But I also think he's going to have, again, 1,000-plus rushing yards this season. He missed the Jets game, and then there were some weird games like the Rams game where they got down early and abandoned the run. A couple weird games where like he only had like 5 to 8 carries. And this is clearly a run-first offense. Like, it sounds weird with Josh Allen, but this is a team. I mean, how many times did we see them like 30% of the time last year with that jumbo package with Alec Anderson as a 6th offensive lineman? Like, this is the identity of this offense. And with the emergence of Spencer Brown and Osiris Torrance, and you still have Deion Dawkins, like, elite offensive line. I don't think he's an elite running back in terms of like the Saquon, Bijan, McCaffrey level, but he's probably in that next tier, right? Like, of talent at running back, you think? Like, not top five maybe, but like, I'm trying to think of the names off the top of my head. He's got to be in that, probably at the very worst, bottom of the second tier of running backs in terms of talent.
Yeah, I 100% think so. He has that burst and breakaway ability that you just can't teach. And what I love is, like you were saying, I think he just felt more and more confident and started kind of running in his own game. Like, he, in the past, it felt like sometimes would try to force things. And this year, it just felt like he was like smooth and under control and took what the defense gave him at times. And other times he would see a hole and he was out. But for fantasy purposes, this might sound crazy. I have him inside my top 10.
I don't think it's crazy. I mean, it really, like, maybe some things move, like, say, Ashton Jeanty goes somewhere really good. Maybe he's ahead of him. But, like, if you really look at it, what did he catch? 30-something passes this past season? Again, I thought he was going to catch close to 50 this season. That was one of the reasons I was really high on him.
He easily could.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I already mentioned Josh Allen's checkdown rate going up. And they don't, and the problem is, too, like, and we'll talk about it when we get to the passing game, the Bills went with this everybody eats mantra, and at times it was good for certain players, and at times it was catastrophic for players because they threw the ball to everybody. But yeah, I mean, if Ty Johnson, for whatever reason, wasn't back next season, unless they bring in somebody, yeah, all of a sudden you're getting more third down usage from James Cook. That could be massive for him. He's going to be one of the 10 most efficient running backs on a per carry basis, most likely. And again, like, it'd be one thing if he was getting like 14, say he scored like 14, 15 rushing touchdowns and 9 of them came from like 30 plus yards. I'd be like, okay, maybe tough to project, but he got the massive bump we've been waiting for in short yardage work. Maybe Ray Davis gets a little bit more in his second season, but also, like, what if it's the Bills, who still clearly have a Super Bowl window, say, look, James Cook, last year of his contract, maybe he's going to want more than we're willing to pay him when we have these other positions we have to address. Just give him a bunch of work again and try to get the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I don't think there's many running backs who have seen their value rise more this past season than Jimbo. And I haven't started my 2025 early rankings yet, but I'd be shocked if he was out to the top 12, and I'd probably doubt he will be.
I was starting mine yesterday, just like my RB1s, because we're doing a segment on the pod tomorrow about it. And I have him at 8, like, ahead of Bucky Irving, Breece Hall, Jonathan Taylor, which...
Yeah, Taylor's the only one there where I'm like a little bit hesitant, just because Taylor's... I mean, like, I don't expect it, but those last, what is it, like 4 weeks of season, he was getting like 31 touches per game. But there's also the splits with Anthony Richardson about, okay, he loses goal line work and loses receptions. But yeah, I would have him over Breece. I would have him over Bucky. They're pretty similar players. It's just in terms of workload and skill set, honestly. It's just, who do you want, the 60% guy in the Bills offense or the Bucks offense? And I'm going with the Bills offense, obviously.
Agreed.
Anything on Ray Davis going into the second season?
I really like Ray Davis as a player. But I don't know if there's enough for him to, like, he's an
elite
handcuff.
Would you make him, I usually don't go about this, but like, say you drafted Jimbo, would you try to make it a priority to get Ray Davis late in your draft?
Yes, he is one of the few, and I'm like you, I'm not like, okay, I need to get like Ray Davis if I have James Cook, but I do think he is one of the elite handcuffs because you saw it in that Jet game this year.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Like, yeah, he has RB1 potential once James Cook goes out, but he's like Alexander Mattison. It's funny, I'll use this example. Like, Madison was for Dalvin Cook, right? Like, no standalone value when the starter's healthy, but if the starter misses time, then you're playing, like you used to every week, if Dalvin Cook was out, you're playing Alexander Mattison. I kind of feel Ray Davis is in that same group.
Yeah, and this is a power run game, a lot of power duo concepts, and Ray Davis fits that perfectly. We saw it in the Jets game. We saw it. Remember that San Fran game in the snow? Like, it looked like it'd be a Ray Davis game, and then Jimbo got going. But, like, Ray Davis fits this offense perfectly. He got actually a little bit more work than I thought because Sean McDermott usually doesn't play rookies a ton. He was impressive. Definitely keep an eye on him, obviously. And who knows, in 2 years from now, if James Cook is on the team, I think they'd be pretty comfortable with Ray Davis as a 1A, if it came down to it 2 years down the line.
If Ty Johnson again gets signed somewhere else though, and then we start to see Ray Davis sprinkled in the passing game, because that's something he could do. Like, he caught over 60 balls in college.
And the Bills are very matchup specific. Remember that Lions game? Like, if they find an avenue against a team that plays a lot of man coverage and has a weakness covering with linebackers, like Ty Johnson like started that game and was like getting six receptions. Like, they will play to whatever matchup is beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if he'll get, if Ty Johnson's gone, he could get more pass game work, and then he could potentially have standalone value. So again, I know Ty Johnson isn't like a big fantasy relevant name, but he's one of those players that his impact it's greatly felt on the players that are fantasy relevant more than his own fantasy value.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, breaking down the passing game, wide receivers and tight ends, Khalil Shakir, the wide receiver one in Buffalo, what's going on with Amari Cooper going forward, and is Dalton Kincaid a bust? We'll break it all down on the podcast here for the numbers. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, back with Michael F. Florio from NFL Fantasy and NFL Network, breaking down the Buffalo Bills season in review for 2025. Let's get to the passing game, Florio, which was probably the most polarizing part of this offense and maybe one of the more talking points of fantasy this offseason. No Stephon Diggs, no Gabe Davis. I mean, they had like over 50% of their targets gone from last season. Going into the season, I think Shakir was the only person to catch a regular season pass from Josh Allen at the wide receiver position. And there was a lot of planting of the flags, right? Is it going to be Shakir? Is it going to be Keon Coleman as the upside play? Is it going to be Curtis Samuel with the familiarity with Joe Brady's offense? And then, of course, the tight ends we'll talk about in a minute. But staying with receivers, I've always loved Khalil Shakir as a Bills fan, and I feel like I should have been more on him this offseason. I was a little bit into Curtis Samuel, and it wasn't like this elite volume efficiency, massive fantasy season, but it was clearly Khalil Shakir as the most trustworthy target from Josh Allen. 6.6 targets per game. Not a lot, but again, they spread the ball around a lot. 25% target per out run rate. He was top 20 in EPA per target. And simply put, just the eye test, every time he got the football, he made something happen.
Yeah, he is awesome. I will pat myself on the back a little here. I was pretty heavy on Khalil Shakir last offseason because I thought he would step up as Josh Allen's go-to guy. I didn't think he would be the Bills' like go-to guy every single game. I thought like he would be their downs, like out, like when you need a big completion, like that's the guy who steps up for Josh Allen. But my approach with the Bills receivers coming into this season, I was firmly off of Curtis Samuel. I don't know. I've never been a big supporter of his. I think he's a much better real life talent than fantasy.
But I fell for it, but I will say he had the turf toe in the offseason. Yeah. It was encouraging to see him in the playoffs. He started to be more involved, but yeah, I should have been on Shakir. He was younger. He's more talented. Just probably should have been on him more.
But For me, like, I was like, Shakir's the best value, especially because he was going last of the top three Bills receivers. But I thought Keon Coleman was the breakout candidate and like the upside guy to target. So I had a number. I had them, one of them, on a lot of rosters, but I had a couple of rosters where I had both Shakir and Coleman. And there was a stretch before Coleman got hurt where I was playing both of them weekly.
Yeah, and like Coleman, it was tough with Coleman because he, like you said, he got hurt halfway through the season. Brandon Bean and his end of season press conference said like he really couldn't get back to what he, the momentum he was building before that. And like we didn't expect Keon Coleman with his archetype to be a consistent like every week top 35 receiver, but yeah, like he definitely flashed at times, the Seattle game in particular. But Shakir, man, I mean, only Ja'Marr Chase had more yak in the NFL. Shakir averaged 7.9 yards after the catch per reception, which was fourth most in the NFL. He's clearly the guy. Josh, every time they ask him about Shakir, just cannot speak more highly of him. And then the other reason, like, I was a little bit lower on Shakir was I was so high on Dalton Kincaid, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Amari Cooper then joined the team, right? Week 7. As a Bills fan, I love the trade. I thought he was kind of what they needed, the guy on the outside that can separate. First game was with the Tennessee game where he runs like less than 20 routes, but he has like 50 yards and a touchdown. I'm like, okay, here we go. This is going to be great. Then he hurts his wrist, misses a couple games. But man, like with this wide receiver rotation consisting of Shakir, Samuel at times, but for the most part, it was Shakir, it was Matt Collins, it was Keon Coleman and Amari Cooper. Look, Matt Collins was in the Gabe Davis role, and with the team that runs the ball this much, and as good as Matt Collins is run blocking, he wasn't coming off the field very often. So Amari Cooper, his highest snap share in a game since joining the Bills was 54%. He just couldn't get it going.
No, he could not. And I was someone who last offseason was pounding the table for Browns Amari Cooper because I've long thought he was just an overrated or underappreciated, pick your word, wide receiver in this league. Like, typically tends to get drafted as a wide receiver 3 in fantasy drafts, but I feel like he's a wide receiver 2, and any week he can win you the week. We saw that like in the Lions game where he went off, even though he didn't play a ton of snaps in that one. He had a lot of volume. I don't know what happened to Amari Cooper this year. Like, when he was with the Browns, and he was getting all those air yards and all those targets, but not a lot of production, it was easy to be like, okay, this is a Deshaun Watson problem, mm-hmm. not an Amari Cooper problem. I, like you, was very ecstatic when they traded for him. I was like, I didn't think he'd be like the Steph Diggs, but I was like, okay, they got their new outside X receiver who could stretch the field, all this stuff. And then they really didn't use him all that much. So for fantasy, his stock, I think, is trending down because he's 30, going to be 31 next year, starting to get to that age cliff. Not sure where he'll end up because I don't think it's a guarantee that the Bills bring him back.
Right.
It depends on the money that he's going to demand, I believe. But yeah, for me, it was disappointing tenure with the Bills. I look, as a person and as a real life player, like he said and did all the right things. But for fantasy and production wise, I had much higher hopes.
It's really tough, too, because joining a new team halfway through the season, I don't think it's easy. I think it's easier for somebody like Amari Cooper because he's a veteran. He's incredibly sharp. But when you're trying to get on the same page with a new quarterback and you're playing limited snaps to start and then you hurt your wrist and miss a couple games, it's just tough. And I was honestly surprised in the playoffs that Keon Coleman was running more routes than him. I didn't agree with that, honestly. So I don't know if from a Bills aspect, if it was just, we want to roll with the guys that have been here longer, which is weird to say about Keon Coleman, but I guess technically he was there longer. I thought Cooper had some flashes, like in that Chiefs game, the regular season game, where you're playing a team that blitzes a lot and plays man, and he made a couple huge plays down the sideline. The Rams game, he was impressive. It's just tough when the offense is literally just sprinkled through 8 different guys can catch a pass on a given game. Like you said, he's a free agent. I think at this point, like say Amari Cooper is back with the Bills, you're drafting him after, well after Shakir, and you're, I don't know, are you like, I don't know if I, right now, if I love either, but like, are you drafting Keon Coleman or Cooper if he's back with the Bills? Like, it's clearly Shakir and then a massive drop, just because the way this offense is set up with Joe Brady and all this yak and stuff like that, like, it's Shakir getting 6 to 7 touches per game, screen, stuff like that, and then, you know, Matt Collins get a deep shot, Cooper, etc. It's just, I didn't think, I agree with you. I was cautioning people that it wasn't going to be this 30% target share situation like we saw from Steph, but I didn't think it'd be like, this guy can't even play 60% of the snaps either.
Yeah, and if he's back, I'm not sure which I would, my initial reaction was I would take Coleman first because he played over Cooper, right, and he's younger and still, he's still on the upward trajectory you would imagine at his age. And Cooper's on the downward trajectory at his point in his career. But the one thing that gives me pause is Joe Brady would have a whole offseason to develop plays for Cooper, and they'd have a whole preseason to kind of develop chemistry and stuff with Josh Allen. One thing, like, it's different for Devontae Adams, who literally was living with his quarterback when he got right. traded. A lot of these wide receivers that got traded in season struggle to make a big impact on their new team because it's one of the hardest positions to just acclimate on the fly to, because there's so many different things that receivers have to do on any given snap. So maybe if he's there all preseason, it would come down to what we're hearing at camp, I think, and like if one clearly has the leg up over the other. But until then, I'd probably lean with Keon Coleman.
Yeah, and the Bills offense is not easy to pick up. They have a lot of different stuff they do, a lot of different checks, stuff like that. So we'll see. I mean, I don't envision there being a massive market for Amari Cooper. So as a Bills fan, I'd like to have him back. I thought, you know, his attitude was awesome. He did not care about getting targets. I would like to have seen him get more targets, but I think he can still contribute at this point of his career. I don't think the lack of production we saw from him with the Bills is indicative of like him all of a sudden being done. I think it was more of a situational rotation scheme type of thing. So I definitely still think he can play. Let's go to tight end, because this is a position that we expected to be really, really, really evident in this Buffalo offense, a team that's run a lot of two tight end sets since they drafted Dalton Kincaid and obviously extended Dawson Knox recently. If I had a list of 10 players that I wanted to draft in fantasy this offseason, James Cook was on that list, and so was Dalton Kincaid, and he just didn't deliver. I mean, 20th in fantasy points per game, 22nd in fantasy points per out run. And the reason I was high on him, I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? You take away Stephon Diggs, you take away Gabe Davis, you have somebody that could have theoretically led the team in targets as a tight end from Josh Allen. I wrote about him all offseason. Last year, and the plays where Stephon Diggs was off the field for the Bills, Kincaid had a 23% target share. I was like, okay, I don't think we'll see that, but if he can get anywhere close to that, we're all systems go. He only has a 15% target share this past season, 4 end zone targets. The drops continue to be a problem. The downfield usage was still inconsistent. Like, are we at the point now where it's like, Kincaid, they trade up from the first round? Is it too? I mean, it's been 2 years. Like, is he just a massive bust, and is it just not going to happen for him?
I wouldn't say that. I think that his rookie year was solid, in my opinion. Like, he had that stretch where Dawson Knox was out, and you were like, okay, this is why the Bills drafted
him. His advanced metrics were pretty good, in his rookie season.
Yeah. And just like you, I was all over him last year. He was the tight end that it was like, if I don't get Trey McBride, I want Dalton Kincaid. That was how I was going into drafts with tight end last year. And it was very disappointing because early in the year, before they had Amari Cooper, I kept going on shows and being like, look, I know it's disappointing right now for Dalton Kincaid, but he had 10 targets this week. He had 8 targets this week. Like, he's their top target every week. And then he missed time and everything shifted. Even when he came back, like, it was Shakir was pretty consistently the top target, and Kincaid was fighting for what was left with the others. And to me, what was telling was both Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean after the season were like, this guy needs to bulk up. He needs to put on some muscle. He needs to like make himself be felt more out there. And that to me is something that I look back and I'm like, yeah, I kind of see what they're saying. Like, at no point in time has Dalton Kincaid ever like really been physically imposing or been able to really push his will on other teams. Yeah. It's kind of
he's always
like,
been a fluid guy, fluid moving. Wasn't, you know, at Utah really asked to run block. And on this Bills offense, like that would have been okay if this was the, like the Brian Daboll iteration of the Bills offense, where it was like, we'll spread you out, we'll just throw the ball all over the field, four wide. And now it's all of a sudden it's six offensive linemen, it's two tight ends, it's we're running the ball with these duo concepts down your throat. And like that hurts Kincaid because A, he's got to get on the field, but B, you want those, you know, heavy formations, especially in close where they run play action and Kincaid get easy touchdowns. And yeah, like that's the concern for him. Like he still shows flashes as a route runner with, he still shows that fluid movement, but there's a lot of times where I notice like he sits down a spot where Josh expects him to keep running or vice versa. Mm-hmm. He still has a couple issues with drops. I wouldn't be as down on Kincaid.
Wait, he has issues with drops?
Kincaid's had a couple, like, it's not like a ton of drops, but it's like timely drops,
no,
I should say.
Oh, no, I'm joking because of how the...
Oh, yeah, I've erased that from my memory. I don't even want to talk about that. And, man, it's like, you feel so bad for him, too, because, like, Josh should have not even been able to make that play, and of course he did. And
I know we said we weren't going to talk about it, but I hated the whole he should have flipped it to Shakir.
Oh my, don't get me started on that.
If Kincaid catches that is, we're talking about,
dude,
that
Florio,
being the best throw of Josh Allen's
career.
What about
this? Fourth and five with the game on the line, a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Can you imagine Twitter and social media if Josh Allen throws, because if at the time Shakir was behind the line of scrimmage, it would have been like 7 to 8 yards shy of the first down. Can you imagine if Josh Allen threw the ball short of the first down marker on fourth and five? Exactly. He would have got absolutely destroyed. So I don't want to hear that. And of course, there's the fact that he had three free rushers in his face. The one thing I will say is I believe there could have been a situation. I haven't seen if Josh talked about it where he might have slid the protection the wrong way. But regardless, the fact that he made that throw is insane. And I'm not saying that's an easy catch, but you trade up for a tight end to make that catch. It's a catch you have to make.
Quote unquote, best hands in the draft.
Yeah, it's a catch you have to make. But
and it was one that in live time looked like very difficult. And you're like, oh, man. Like,
and then they show the replay in slow motion. And you're like, it was right there. And
yeah, you're like, he had his forearms under it. But look, I know we're off topic here. Like, it was hard for me to feel bad for him the next day when I saw his response was like, oh, well, it sucks. That's football. I'm like, no, man. Like I'm not saying you got to go all Mark Andrews type reaction on there. But just fans want to see you wear it on your sleeve a little bit like they are.
Yeah, it was tough. I'm convinced that if that ball gets caught, they go down and score and win the game. But I digress. I'm tired of talking about what else with the Bills. But Kincaid and Knox, like, Knox is one of the, I don't know, you could make the case that Dawson Knox is like the second most trusted target for Josh Allen right now. And that's important. And that's going to hurt Kincaid. You mentioned his splits as a rookie when Knox was out, they were impressive, but it's so tough because like I don't want to overreact too much because it's still a third year tight end. It's still a talented player who can do a lot of good things in a PPR setting, and he's still a second on the team in targets. Like, he could have 80 plus targets again in this offense. That's valuable, but from where it's like, okay, he had the rookie season, and then going into this offseason, it was like, okay, he's probably a top five tight end. I mean, where do we slide him in now? Because we're going to have, you know, Tyler Warren come in. Where is he going to go? He's not going to have a Brock Bowers type season, but he could be easily drafted ahead of Kincaid. I mean, Jonnu Smith broke out late last season. Like, I have no clue where to put Kincaid this year after last year was pretty easily top six at the very worst.
So, like I said, we're working on our top tens for a pod for tomorrow. And at tight end, I have him right now slotted at 10. I went back and forth between him and Jonnu Smith, and I think most people will have Jonnu higher. My thinking was like, Kincaid is younger. He's tied to a much better quarterback and better offense. And Jonnu, like, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, but like, this was by far his best season. But regardless of where you fall on those two, like, to me, Kincaid is a low-end tight end one. But I'm doing this without any rookies in yet because I'm still very early in my process for the NFL draft. So that could change. But I think, and one thing I keep talking about when I talk about like tight end strategies is I'm done with like chasing the Dalton Kincaids and the Kyle Pittses and these middle round tight ends that have upside. What I'm going to do instead is like, if I don't get one of the elite top guys, then I probably won't because they're probably going to be too expensive for me where I like to take them. I'll wait and like I'll double dip with these late. Like if I could get Dalton Kincaid and Jonnu Smith or Dalton Kincaid and one of the rookies or Evan Engram or something like that, I feel good about that because only one of them needs to hit or whatever. And that to me feels like in a much more appropriate spot for Dalton Kincaid. I know I was sipping the Kool-Aid last year, but it did feel like we were kind of putting the cart before the horse and we were expecting him to take that next step before he took it. But I would argue that I still think he has that upside in him. Maybe we not as high as we thought, but certainly higher than anything he's given us so far. And if you're going to give him to me now at a cheaper than ever cost, I'll gladly buy back in on that because I think a lot of people are going to remember that playoff game and going to remember drafting him tight end 5 or 6 and him not living up to those expectations and be like, I'm done with Dalton Kincaid. And it's going to lead to him being like a low end tight end 1, maybe even a high end tight end 2. And at that cost, I'm right back in.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you mentioned about if you're not fully sold. Of course, I was all in, so it definitely made it more difficult for me. But like, if you have any sort of question marks about one of those potential breakout tight ends that are going in the middle rounds of drafts, it might just make more sense to just double dip at the end. Because you look at where Kincaid was drafted last season, like right around pick 50, like some of the players that you could have gotten in that range and players that did go after him in a lot of drafts. I mean, you're talking about T. Higgins, Zay Flowers, Terry McLaurin, like Rashee Rice would have obviously smashed if he didn't get hurt. Like you're foregoing a lot of really good players in that range that are going to be like wide receiver 2s for you with upside for more potentially. But I do agree that like I definitely don't want to just flat out give up on Kincaid because he still was a really, really talented receiving prospect in college. I do agree, like he probably should try to bulk up a little bit, get some more strength, but down year he still has 75 targets. Like I think he could get 80 plus in this offense again, and 80 plus targets in a Josh Allen offense is still gonna have some fantasy relevancy. But finally, like dynasty wise, like you kind of probably have to hold him, right? Like, I don't know if anybody's going out to try to acquire him right now, especially when we do have a pretty good rookie tight end class.
Yeah, I think he's not a sell, that's for sure. I think he's a hold. If anything, I could make the case for a buy, like a buy low opportunity potentially, but yeah, his stock has clearly trended down since this time last season.
Yeah, it was probably one of my 5 worst misses this season, but I'm still.
You weren't alone.
I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm a little concerned that they and it hurts more too because like they traded up for him in that draft and they could have gotten some more wide receiver help later on or in that same spot, and then didn't have to draft Keon Coleman this season. But we'll see. I mean, look, I think Brandon Bean's done a really good job, especially later in drafts, but for whatever reason, a lot of his early round draft picks lately have not panned out. And it's early. I mean, Keon Coleman, it's way too early for him. But and maybe it's too early for Kincaid too. But from a fantasy perspective, he is clearly on the decline. Maybe not like where you're ranking him as like tight end 15, 16, but definitely not as high as we did last season. Florio, any closing thoughts on our beloved Buffalo Bills? Again, free agency wise, we'll see about Ty Johnson, Amari Cooper. Other than that, though, I mean, in terms of skill position players, again, Jimbo has one more year. I don't think Josh Allen's going to go anywhere anytime soon. I could be wrong. I think he's pretty safe.
Better not.
And Matt Collins, I think, is a free agent, too. And like, I think they'll want him back, too, because he's so key for them in the run game. So, like, all these kind of players that you don't expect to be relevant for fantasy, they're pretty relevant for the Bills, which kind of makes them relevant for fantasy.
Yeah. No, I want Matt Collins back because, like, he... like, I'm a Met fan. He's kind of like Jesse Winker in that sense. Like, he's not great, but you need a player, especially when you're a team like in the playoffs and stuff. You need a player that other fan bases and other teams don't like. And like, he's one of those guys, like, you love him when he's on your team and you absolutely despise him when he's on another team. And the Bills need a guy like that to bring some toughness. But I know a lot of people are going to say they need receivers. I'm not saying they don't, but to me, the biggest
dude, they just average 30 points per game with a absolute rotation of, I mean, we can say Shakir is a good receiver and then Cooper, obviously, in week seven. But like, they didn't have a top 30 wide receiver on the roster last year and they averaged 30 points per game. I think they'll address the position later on, but you have Josh Allen, you have this run game, get a receiver late in the draft.
Yeah, exactly. To me, and you hit the nail on the head with saying like Kincaid, So-So, Coleman, so I mean, Kier Elam is obviously a huge liability. Like, trade this first round pick, please. Give me Miles Garrett or Max Crosby.
Watched the Eagles, like, how they won that Super Bowl with a 4-man pass rush and able to cover on the back end. And the Bills' defensive line has been so disappointing in these playoffs the last couple of seasons. Go get Miles Garrett. I know for a fact he didn't actually make a list, but I would bet $1,000 Buffalo's won. I would literally bet all the money in the world Buffalo's won. Especially because during the Pro Bowl, he's chatting with Deion Dawkins and Jimbo. Like, go get him. Yeah, you have to.
Max Crosby was basically championing to be a Bill the entire playoffs. Yeah. Like, get if you miss out on Garrett, get Crosby. Like, you need a elite defensive difference maker on the defensive side of the ball. Go get Josh Allen, his version of Chris Jones, and see what he could do, because I have been a firm believer since the 13-second game that is the one thing holding the Bills back. And I thought it might have been Von Miller when they got him, but then that was taken before us before we really got to see it go into effect. But I think that is the one thing that has continued to hold them back. You could get by with the offense that you have as long as you have Josh Allen.
Yeah, your floor on offense with Josh Allen is, like, you won't be worse than, like, the eighth best offense in the league. Like, that's probably your floor. And your ceiling is what it was this season. Go get Miles Garrett. Go get an elite pass rusher. Put pressure on these quarterbacks. Like, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that Miles Garrett could legitimately make the Bills a favorite to win the Super Bowl. Like, he's that good of a player. It's that important of a position. Yep. And it's what's been holding them back. So, yeah, I'm cool with it, man. Trade the first. Trade whatever you have to. Trade it all.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. Like, we have a bunch of good guys on the D-line that you're asking to be better than that come the playoffs. And it's like, no, that's not how it works, man. Like, you need to get a difference maker. And if so, I agree with you. I think they're Super Bowl favorites if they do so. And again, the one thing that I think has held them back. Because you say that legitimately giving up 35 points per game against the Chiefs in the playoffs. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's brutal. I think we're talking about if just one of those games goes a different way with the defense, Josh probably has a Super Bowl. Do what they have to. If for whatever reason they don't make a splash move for one of these defensive pass rushers, draft interior defensive lineman and just hope that somebody hits, because you have Josh Allen. You need to maximize this window and the defensive line in particular. You know, we're getting, like, McDermott's done a great job of, you know, building the secondary. You know, Christian Benford was one of the five best defensive backs in football. Taron Johnson broke out a couple years ago. He's one of the best slot guys in the league. Like, the defensive backs have all been great for the most part since McDermott's been here. It's just been inconsistencies in the pass rush, especially in the playoffs. But we got to get out of here. Florio and I could talk about the Bills forever. Before we do, though, Florio, appreciate the time. Talk about what you have going on over at NFL Fantasy, all that great stuff. Obviously not as busy, I would guess, with the season ending, but still plenty of offseason stuff. And like you said, we have the NFL draft right around the corner.
Yeah, definitely not as busy, but definitely starting my draft prep right now. We're the podcast is still going strong, NFL Fantasy Football Show. We're twice a week right now. No TV show, but that'll be back before you know it. And then I'm also doing stuff over at rotoballer.com, writing some dynasty articles, some early 2025 stuff. And I have a podcast there called Florio's Football Show, which I talk different football stuff weekly. So check that out as well. Lots of lots of places. And again, I always say this, easiest place, Twitter, Instagram, at Michael F. Fleurier. You kind of get it all in one there.
Awesome. Appreciate the time. It was a blast. I knew it would be. This will probably be the longest episode of the season interview series, which I fully anticipated it, and it's definitely my fault as well. But it's a good conversation, and I didn't get a chance to really vent about the Bills yet. So, like I said, I was sick for a week after. So this is my therapy, and I appreciate you helping me through it. But that's the Bills to kick off the season in review series. We'll continue the AFC East up next on Friday with the Miami Dolphins, a really interesting team about the changes they faced. A lot less deep passing, a lot more Jonnu Smith. We'll talk about the Dolphins in length on Friday. Check out For the Numbers on your podcast feed. Subscribe, rate, review, and of course, check out all the amazing content at FTNFantasy.com. For Florio, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll catch you guys next time.